Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Joseph, we were talking yesterday about the effectiveness of Russian propaganda, and there was a story in the New York Times I wanted to mention to you. Maybe you saw it. It was about a recycled false Russian claim that the West was looting religious relics and art from a monastery in Kyiv. And U.S. officials said this article stands out not because of what it claimed, but because of its source and intended audience. It appeared in various news outlets. State Department officials, though, have linked the article to what they describe as a covert information operation to spread Russian propaganda in Central and South America by producing articles that appear to originate with local media organizations and not the Russian government. And this is kind of what you were referring to yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, Bob, and hello from Kharkiv. The Russians are very crafty with their propaganda. I mean, look at, you know, for the entire presidency of Donald Trump, the Russians convinced the world that they interfered with the election. And later, you know, as the details came out, that was more of a ruse. You know, there actually were no details about what they did, but they're able to convince people to believe things that are not based in reality. And in the case of that monastery in Kyiv, you know, that has been, until a few months ago, that was staffed by members of the Russian Orthodox Church, part of the Moscow Patriarchy, which really was, that religion was, the Orthodoxy was banned when communism started, but then Stalin rejuvenated it as a branch of the KGB. And to this day, it still functions as part of the modern KGB, which is called the FSB. And finally, Ukrainians, really was the people insisting that the Ukrainian government get rid of these Russian monks who were serving as spies. But then another tricky part of this propaganda, Politico had a story last week about the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, so based in Kyiv, not Moscow, and saying that the Orthodox Church, you know, has trouble because they're trying to keep Ukraine traditional. And this, when Ukraine is getting support from sort of the liberal West. And this is very curious because it's exactly that type of story that will make those Americans who already are skeptical of Ukraine even more skeptical, to think, oh, you know, this is, Ukraine is a project of these left-wing elitists. When the reality is, you know, your average, I mean, most people of Ukraine are very traditional. It's a very tolerant country. You know, as we've said often, you know, a Jewish president, a Muslim secretary of defense, but it is an extremely traditional country, whether you're Jewish or Crimean Tartar Muslim or Christian, Greek Catholic or Orthodox. And what this political article misses, it makes it seem like the church is trying to control the people, when really it is the people who really, I mean, they really keep their traditions very well. And that gets very much missed, this idea of the agency of the people, how the people want to live. And if those, you know, conservative Americans who are opposed to Ukraine, if they really knew that Ukrainians are very traditional, they might at least stop making fun of them. You're, you know, they might at least give them some thought. Maybe we should support these people. But Russian propaganda wants the Americans especially to think that Ukraine is some project of the global elite, which is definitely not. And so this propaganda is a very tricky thing to manage. And as I speak right now, by the way, I just heard from friends in Tel Aviv. They're under a barrage of rockets in the past 20, 30 minutes. Hmm. And a friend who's got two kids just sent me a photo from the block across from them. And a Hamas rocket hit. And, it, you know, it's so strange because I'm sitting here in Kharkiv, where when I saw those photos from Tel Aviv, it's a reminder here before an alarm sounds, a missile could hit any time. And that's why I can feel, I know the pain and trauma that they're going through right now in Tel Aviv.
That's incredible. We'll follow up on that on our news here. I thought you'd be interested in something that was on the John Williams podcast, The Mincing Rascals, yesterday, Joseph. A reporter for Axios, Monica Ng, was discussing her reporting on why the arrival of Ukrainian refugees and Latino migrants in Chicago has been so different. Let's listen to this, and then we'll talk about it.
I wanted to understand the different factors behind each of the migrant groups. There's this group called the Self-Reliance Association, a Ukrainian group that speaks to them in their own language, gets them signed up for everything, gets their kids signed up for school. A very streamlined process that gives Ukrainians immediately a leg up on, let's say, this other group of migrants, in that they're here legally, they have work authorization, and they have a sponsor, someone who says, I will watch out for them. On the other hand, most of the Latino migrants who've arrived here don't have sponsors, don't have work authorization, and have not come here through a program where the United States is officially welcoming them.
We have a huge Ukrainian population here, and Chicago has absorbed more than 30,000 Ukrainian refugees over the last 18 months with little controversy, Joseph.
Well, and we see the situation in Europe, too. I mean, there's been very little controversy with Poland and many countries, you know, the UK receiving Ukrainian refugees. And a few things to point out about that. For one, almost every Ukrainian, well, really every Ukrainian refugee is their women and children. You know, the men have to stay and fight. And so it's women and children who not only are going and they're, you know, the women are typically working to support their families back here in Ukraine, but they want to come home. They don't want to stay. And even, you know, we've seen that so often. I mean, even here in Kharkiv, you know, every time I return to this city, despite the ongoing Russian attacks, more and more people have returned. And so I think that that does make it makes people a little bit more inclined to welcome them, knowing that they're going to leave. That's one major difference. But I think also the American politicians love to, you know, stir, like they like to keep this immigration issue to keep people under control. And even when I speak with Americans, those conservative Americans who do not support Ukraine, the main thing they say, well, we can't worry about Ukraine because we're being invaded by Mexicans and people from South America, which is, you know, when you've seen a real invasion, you know, when you see tanks from Russia and you have missiles from Russia, you realize that's not an invasion. It's something totally different. But there is a difference in kind. And I think we also see this with what's happening with Gaza. The press and the politicians put pressure on Israel for the humanitarian catastrophe within Gaza. But how come, you know, Gaza borders Egypt. How come Egypt does not welcome the Palestinians as refugees? They send a little bit of aid, not very much, but they don't let them cross that border. And the same Queen of Jordan gave an interview on CNN a few days ago, and she was asked, you know, how come you don't welcome the Palestinians into Jordan? And she kind of brushed it off and said, well, you know, we don't want them to leave their homeland. But, you know, think about how the Polish people welcomed the Ukrainians so heartily, even though they did have a history of some animosity. They welcomed the Ukrainians, and the Palestinians are mainly the same religion as the Egyptians. And so why did they not welcome them? And it's because Palestine, especially in Gaza, the population has been so radicalized that Arab Muslim nations, you know, are afraid of having them in their country. And this gets really quite missed. And I think here's where we see that the story of Ukraine shows that we are responsible for our governments, you know, and this applies to everyone. You look at the 1930s with the Germans, you know, we might want to brush it off. But if we have hateful rhetoric in our hearts and with our neighbors, it's going to lead to major problems. And Ukrainians showed in their revolution of 2014 that you really can take control of your society and steer it away from a hateful direction. And I don't know if we have time to play the clip, but I interviewed my friend Taras Bick, who's a civil society activist and a corruption fighter here in Ukraine. And he was part of that revolution in 2014. And in our podcast, Land of the Free, I interviewed him about the impact of the Maidan Revolution. And if we have time, you can listen real quick.
All right, here you go.
With the Euromaidan, with Revolution of Dignity, Putin and maybe many others, it seems, lost their control to plunder from Ukraine. Do you think, had there been no Maidan in 2014, would there be any kind of war right now, as we are seeing?
I mean, if Maidan lost back in 2014, or if there were no Maidan, Yanukovych would simply give up Ukraine to Russia, and we would have been fully controlled by Russia. Ukraine would be another Belarus today. And just imagine the consequences in this case for Europe, for example. Imagine that it was not only Belarus that is fully controlled by Russia, but Ukraine, with its, well, turns out, quite strong army. And imagine Russia, in addition to Russian army, has Belarusian army, Ukrainian army, and it would be up to invade NATO anytime in this case. So this, basically, I would say Maidan has saved not only Ukraine, but Maidan has saved Europe as well.
Very interesting history lesson, Joseph. I'm glad we got that in today.
Yeah, and it applies to, you know, if people stay in their country and they change it for the better, the world will be better. But if you let, you know, the radicals take charge, or you flee the country and don't try to change it, we see the catastrophes that ensue.
Yeah, I also think that we all need to go to Ellis Island and be educated or re-educated on how this nation was built, a nation of immigrants. We'll talk Monday, Joseph. Thanks, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. And you can see that interview at UkrainianFreedomNews.com. Until Monday. Thanks.
And, of course, if you go to WGNRadio.com, we post all of Joseph Lindsley's links and material.